Thanks for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. This week's podcast is a wee bit different. It's not really talking about Celtic at all. It is talking to our medical guru. If she's listening, she'll find that funny. It is my niece, Hayley, and she is an A&E nurse, and she's currently operating in various places, mainly the Royal Infirmary. And sometimes she's on the COVID ward, and sometimes, as you'll hear, she's on the NOVID ward. So it is not a scary podcast at all. It is giving you some general advice. It's talking you through if you find yourself, or if you have a relative finding themselves having to go to hospital. She will talk you through what will happen. She will also let you know that certainly here in Scotland, our hospitals are coping with the demand. And in some ways, A&E is coping very well and is slightly better organised than normal. Enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with Hayley Bridget Mary Gilmore.
2 weeks brand new bright tomorrow make me happy through the year.
Right, so I am joined now by Hayley. So I briefed Hayley on the question that we ask any first-time guest on the podcast, and that is, who's your first Celtic hero and what was your first Celtic game? So, Hayley, question, have you ever been to a Celtic game and do you have a Celtic hero?
I have. I went to a Celtic game when I was younger with my granddad, see Hibs, and my Celtic hero would be Henrik Larsson.
Yeah, but you're not really into football, are you, Hayley?
No, I'm not at all.
So you're on this podcast because you're doing a very special job at the moment. So do you want to tell people what you do for a living?
So I'm a nurse. I work in the nursing bank, which means I get to choose where I work, and I optionally choose to work in A&E across Glasgow.
Okay, so how normally is working in A&E? What's a normal, typical A&E midweek night time like?
It's busy usually when you start your night shift, bit chaotic. To be honest, it just depends on the day. It's different every day in A&E. That's why I quite enjoy it, but it can be chaotic. But it usually starts to settle down around 2 a.m. till about 7 a.m. but you still have patients all night.
And what's a weekend A&E like normally?
That's where the fun is. That is where the chaos is, and like where all your trauma calls are coming in. You do still get that all the time throughout the week, but at the weekend it's a lot busier.
And what sort of mix? I've only ever had the misfortune in the last few years of being in A&E once, and it was with my mother-in-law. And I noted that there was two groups of people. People who were in there around 20 and old people seem to be the two main groups of people. And the people in their 20 seem to also be surrounded by police and the strong smell of alcohol. That seemed to be, I mean, obviously there were some people in the middle, but principally my, twice I have been A&E in the last few years, and the young people had an alcohol smell around them, and there was police in their vicinity, and there was some people in between this, but then there was a group of older people. So is that a good summation of any?
Yeah, to be honest, it is. I wouldn't even say just in their 20s with the police. I mean, that ranges. That goes all the way up to, I'd say, 50s, 60s, coming in smelling of alcohol with the police. I think it just depends on what kind of day that person's had, that they've, and how crazy they've decided to go, that they've ended up in with me, to be honest. But not just people in their 20s, but a big majority of them, yeah. And a lot of elderly people, especially, coming in.
Okay, so that's your typical A&E.
Yeah.
So how's all that changed in the last month, 6 weeks?
It's changed a lot. We've had to divide the A&E department in two separate zones. We've got COVID and NOVID, which I think is an excellent name.
COVID and NOVID.
Yeah, I think there's maybe only one hospital calling it that, but a few others have taken that name as well because it is quite good.
I think actually they should do a kids cartoon called COVID and NOVID.
It's brilliant. It makes you happy, like, oh, I'm in the NOVID area today. It's quite good being in that area. But that is where you get the people that would usually be coming into A&E but have no signs of COVID at all. But in the other areas, just the COVID zone, which is mostly just people that are coming in with stronger symptoms than what you would be asked to isolate at home.
So people come, and I take it people are coming a mixture of ambulance and walking in the door themselves. So talk us through the process at the moment, just in case somebody listening to this actually, do you know what would be really good, Hayley? Since you're our expert, you're a medical expert.
I think I'm the expert, but yes.
You're our medical guru. Do you know what would be really good? Talk us through the experience of somebody arriving at A&E at the moment. So what are they likely to find, for whatever reason, and what are they likely to experience when they come up? So talk us through it.
So usually when you'd come up, you'd be walking into a full waiting room, and it is not like that anymore. You're walking in and we're trying to keep the waiting room as quiet as possible. There is a senior nurse at the reception desk, and they are usually kind of directing people to other places because we're trying to keep people out of hospital as much as we can. So if your symptoms aren't that bad, we'll ask you to go home and isolate. Or if you have something that could be seen by minor injuries or elsewhere, we'll ask you to do that or phone NHS 24 because we're really trying not to have people come into A&E at the moment just for their own safety and the safety of other patients. So when you come in, you'll be seen at reception and a nurse will tell you whether you're going to wait or go somewhere else. And then you probably won't have to wait for that long because we are trying to triage people as quickly as possible. And if you come in with a sign of COVID, you usually won't get triaged. You'll go straight through to the COVID area. Or if you phone through NHS 24 and then come up, you'll go straight through to a different COVID area, which isn't part of A&E. It's the COVID assessment area. So it is quite well organised in that way. If you come in with something that's not COVID at all, you'll come through to the NOVID area and you'll get triaged before you come through, so we know what's been happening with you, why you're here and things like that. Whereas if you go into the COVID area, you get triaged when you're in that area instead. You'll all be wearing masks, and you might be asked to wear a mask as well, even if you've not got any symptoms of COVID, and that's for your own protection as well as all of us. So you'll be seeing us walking around in our visors and our masks and full aprons and things. And that would be the experience you'd have, and you probably wouldn't have to wait that long. We've got lots of doctors and lots of nurses in accident emergency at the moment trying to see people as quickly as possible so that it is a lot faster getting people up towards or getting them out of there if possible.
So at what level, so if I've got a normal illness, so normal illness, I don't think I've got COVID, right?
Like a tummy pain or something.
Yes,
like that.
What should I do? What?
It depends. So usually I would say phone NHS 24 first. If you're in a position where you think you're well enough to be at home but it is really sore, phone NHS 24. But if you feel like I can't cope with this, that's the time that you go to A&E. Because we are trying to keep people out as much as we can. And then you would come in and you'd be seen in the, if you've got no other symptoms, we'd be seen in the area where there's no COVID. So if we are trying to keep people safe and as safe in those areas as much as they are considered red zones.
Okay, so I've got that. And then I'm really unwell. I'm treated in A&E and they say, no, actually, it looks like you've got appendicitis.
Right.
What happens to me then?
Oh, so then you'd be seen by the same doctors you've been seen by before. Like, we would refer you up to surgical, you'd be seen up there in a ward where you might have COVID patients, usually not if it's a surgical ward, they're trying to keep them all separate. However, they do have people isolating there as well. So you would go up to the ward, be seen by your surgeon, have an assessment on whether you need to go to theatre or not, and that would all be done up on the ward, not so much down in A&E.
And do I come on my own?
Yes, if you can. I mean, if you're someone that's vulnerable or you're a carer for someone that's vulnerable, it's important sometimes that you're there because you can be that person's communication. So, but we are really trying to keep all relatives, all friends, all family away, and it is just you come by yourself unless it's a special case like that.
So if I'm the carer for someone who's really, I'm trying to think of an example, say I was a carer for someone who has mental health issues or some form of disability where they're not very good at communicating or whatever, how long do I, if I'm the carer, how long in the process do I get to stay with the person?
You would get to stay with them throughout A&E, and then when they went up to the ward, depending on their level of care, when they go up to the ward, you might be able to stay with them or you might be asked to go home.
Okay.
Rather than an accident emergency, if they have a problem where they can't communicate or they're vulnerable or need you there, usually you will be allowed to stay for the duration of the time they need.
Okay, so that's the NOVID side of things, right? So what if I think I have COVID symptoms, right? At what stage? Because I've read lots of things of people who, you know, part of the reason why they ended up, it seems to be to a point where they couldn't be, where they ended up dying, was actually because they left it too late to get to the hospital. So yeah. At what stage? I don't want to be a burden. I'm trying to save the NHS and save lives. I'm not wanting to be a burden on you. What stage do I then think I need to get to a hospital?
See, this is hard because everyone is experiencing this so differently. So there isn't like a set, you need to go to the hospital now. But if you start feeling like you are really unwell, I would phone NHS 24. I mean, there's symptoms out there where people are getting by and they feel rubbish and it's just like a really bad cold or a really bad flu. But if you're short of breath, you're really struggling, then you do need to phone NHS 24 or phone an ambulance and they can give you the advice that you need. Because it might not be coming up, but usually if you're in that state where you're getting unwell, they would ask you to come in for an assessment. And that's probably the best thing for you at that point.
So what are the symptoms? What are the sort of mild symptoms that people have?
This is the thing, they've been changing all the time. So over the past 6 weeks, there's more symptoms that we hadn't heard of 6 weeks ago or even before that, or... So it is changing. The main ones, obviously, are cough and temperature. That is the main.
Together thing. Or just one? I am wary of any hypochondriacs listening to this then thinking, oh, no.
So, like, some people genuinely have a cough. Like, maybe they're smokers or they have or things like that and genuinely have a cough anyway. So this is where it's hard. And also, it's hay fever season. So people's airways are irritated because of that as well.
Do you know what I have to say? Do you know, I didn't think I had COVID. I thought I had a cold. But this morning I actually worked out. I think at 49, I think I've developed hay fever.
You know, it's been over the past couple of years I have as well, but I can go through 1 year where I don't have it, but this year my eyes have been streaming and it's been hay fever. That's been the thing that's been annoying me.
to me. So symptoms, just a cough?
No. So there's the cough and temperature. Also, there's been other symptoms that people have developed as they've got worse, which are things like sickness and diarrhoea, which were a symptom that come kind of after the cough. Sore throat is another one. And there's been other weird symptoms that they can't tie down. It's like, oh, that's a definite symptom of corona, but some people with it have had it. So, for example, some of those have been things like conjunctivitis, sore ears, body aches, but other people haven't been getting those at all. So there's strange viral symptoms and everyone is different, and that's what we're finding probably really hard about this virus, is there is so many different symptoms and everyone is experiencing it differently. And there's people who live in the same house who can get really unwell and they'll live with their partner who isn't showing any symptoms at all. And they one will test positive and one will test negative, or they'll both test positive and have completely different symptoms. But the main ones to watch out for are definitely temperature, cough, sore throat, and any of the other ones could be seen as something else as well. So I wouldn't take it as being corona straight away. If you start getting sickness and diarrhea or conjunctivitis, these are just other small symptoms that are coming along with the virus.
So if I've got a bad cough and I'm just feeling pretty shit,
yeah,
just staying in my room?
Yeah, stay in.
The typical medical advice if you've got a really bad cold, plenty of fluids and all that stuff?
Yeah, that's what we're asking people to do. And that's just because, and staying in for, and keeping in contact as well. If you're getting tested, you'll be able to find out your results for that. But also, a lot of the tests, some of them are coming back false negatives and things like that as well. And also, the testing's quite hard, because it does only tell you when you have the virus at that time. So you could have already had it, or you could get tested, walk out the next day and get the virus. So this is where the testing is quite difficult with corona as well.
So... I'm really struggling to breathe, and so I go to I phone for an ambulance at that point.
Yes, definitely phone an ambulance at that point.
And then I'm there, so straight away I'm taken to the COVID bit.
Or sometimes, if you phone in to an ambulance, you'll be taken to one of the SATA units, which is our assessment unit for COVID, and they're in a lot of the hospitals as well.
One of the what units, sorry?
SATA, S-A-T-A. Now, I have been told what this stands for so many times. And every time I'm on night shift, and I forget. But to me, it's not relevant. I just know that's the COVID bit that the ambulances go, and they are usually referred to NHS 24, and certain things will be through like Scottish Ambulance Service as well. It just depends on your symptoms.
Right, so...
So if you're really bad, you would probably come into us at A&E. If you are quite bad, but they're able to maintain you, you'd probably go to the SATA unit, and then your care would be decided from there.
So is the SATA unit also at the hospital?
Yes, so that's just beside us. It used to be this is like acute assessment unit that you would maybe go to from a GP referral, are now just COVID SATA units.
Ah, right, okay. So I go to the SATA unit. Will I get a test there?
Usually, yes. If you're coming in with those symptoms, you usually get a test in the hospital.
Okay, so there's been a lot of chat about testing.
Uh-huh.
Are you testing everybody? So does it feel like to you there is enough tests for you to be able to undertake however many tests you want to take at the hospital?
Yes, I mean, it's changed. So at first, when this all came about, we weren't testing everyone, and we had lots of tests available. We then have started, we've modified the test slightly because it's different swabs we can use for it. So we're given just COVID test swabs, and then they quickly ran out and we discovered we could use another swab with the test kit. So there are so many, like, we wouldn't run out of test kits anytime soon, I would imagine, in our A&E anyway.
Okay, so you've got loads of tests, and anybody that comes in that's exhibiting the symptoms is getting tested?
Yes.
So if somebody goes to, what happens if somebody goes to the NOVID because they've got something else, but when they're in the NOVID, the staff there suspect that they've got the COVID?
So that has happened, and that's like normal for that to happen as well, because people who are coming in, they're not saying, oh, I've had winter, I've had a cough, or they'll go for a chest x-ray, maybe a routine chest x-ray as we do for most medical patients, and it'll be seen on their chest x-ray that they might have COVID. Usually they would get moved through to the COVID area or straight up to a COVID unit, just to try and minimise cross-contamination between patients, and then that area that they were in would be completely deep cleaned, and their care would continue for what they came in with, but they could also be treated for corona if their symptoms develop.
And how quickly do you get the COVID test back, results back?
Within 24 to 48 hours.
Right, so somebody comes in and you guys see them in A&E in the COVID, do you then need to find somewhere to keep them in the hospital until you get those tests back?
So if they come into the COVID area, they would automatically go to one of the COVID wards, which have been split across the hospital.
Right.
So a lot of wards have been shut that for elective surgeries that aren't taking place at the moment, and they are now COVID areas. So you would go to one of those wards, and depending on your symptoms, you would either be in a side room or you could be in a cohort room with other patients who also have COVID. Some people are coming in already confirmed COVID from tests they've already had at home, so they would probably go into a cohort room with other confirmed cases. But at the moment, we are trying to keep people who haven't been confirmed with it, but we can't always do that. It's just dependent on bed space, to be honest. But there is enough space between each bed. It's not like they're all crammed into one area. There's more than 6 feet between each bed.
Okay, so once somebody's in, so again, I suppose it's because you're watching the news and you're only seeing about the people who are really severe.
Yeah, that is one thing, and I think it's really scaring people. The patients that are coming in do seem to be quite overwhelmed. People are leaving other things that they wouldn't usually leave because they don't want to come to the hospital because of what they're seeing in the news right now.
So is it a sort of level of person who's in the hospital who's actually not that... I'm struggling to use the right terminology, but someone who doesn't need to be on a ventilator and they can just be monitored, or...
Yeah, we do. We have patients that don't... There are more patients that don't need to be in a ventilator that are ones on a ventilator. In fact, one of my colleagues who I used to work with in orthopaedics, she recently was tested positive for COVID and was in one of the COVID units. She was not on a ventilator. She was on oxygen. She wasn't on high-flow oxygen. So rubbish. She could barely breathe. She barely walked to the toilet. But she recovered within a couple of days and is now back home. So she developed a pneumonia through her COVID, which is quite common, but she didn't need to go on a ventilator. And she has quite a lot of other health issues as well, so it's not everyone is having to go on one. And as much as the ITUs are really busy, I think it is worse in England than what it is in Scotland at the moment as well, from what I'm seeing in the media.
So, yeah, so if somebody's severe but not severe enough to need a ventilator, they're just finding it really, everything, what's the sort of general thing that's the difficulty for them, just struggling to breathe?
Struggling to breathe, and that makes you panic, that makes you anxious, obviously, when you're struggling to breathe, so it just feels horrible for you, is the only way I can describe it. You're just feeling really tired, just crap, basically, not hardly able to breathe, you're not really wanting to eat much, you're barely wanting to get up and move around, and you can't also, because you're on the oxygen, you're not able to see any of your loved ones. That's another thing that people are finding really hard when they get admitted to these areas, if you're not allowed to see any visitors at all. So I think people are feeling quite isolated and just feeling genuinely unwell.
I suppose the other aspect is people will be really concerned that if they're so severe that they're going into a hospital and having breathing problems, that they might die. So are a good chunk of those people going in without ever getting to the ventilator and then getting back out like your colleague after 2-3 days?
Yeah, I'd say the majority of people are doing that.
Right, okay.
Which is good.
Yeah, because I'm not... Actually, as I was starting that question, I thought, what if Hayley then says, no? They bought their clogs. That would be a real downer on them.
Not at all. And there's many patients that come into us, even in the COVID area, that will get discharged home, to isolate at home, once they've maybe been treated or maybe given some painkillers or other things like that that might help them along. They'll be sent home. It just really depends on the actual patient, but a lot of people are not ending up in ITU or on ventilators.
And is some, I mean, I know that they've not got a cure, but are you just monitoring people, or are you actually able to give people medication which is making them feel better?
I mean, yes, we are. So we can give people nebulizers, which is making it easier for them to breathe. In fact, I had a lady the other day that she was feeling horrible. She looked well. She'd been going about her business, and then it just hit her all of a sudden, which is happening with quite a lot of people. She came really short of breath. She came into A&E with us, put her on a nebulizer, gave her some painkillers, and within like 10 minutes, she was feeling better just from having just that relief of the nebulizer, just clearing out our airways and things like that. So there are things we can do to make patients feel better, but there is no set cure yet. So it's just managing symptoms as we can. Is what we're trying at the moment.
Okay, so that's all the punters and the patients. On to you guys. So sometimes you're in the NOVID and sometimes you're in the COVID. Is that just a rota thing? Do you get the option to say, I don't want to go in COVID, or how does that work?
Because I'm bank, I don't work anywhere full time. So I do have an option whether I want to work in this or not. However, I feel like we're all in it together and always working in E, so I'm not going to stop now. There are a few people I know that are really against working in those areas, but most of the people are happy to. Like, we know it's our job. I mean, there are other things that we would like to be better about it, but no one's really complaining about it. The only people that aren't refusing to work but are being sent home are people who are pregnant and really high risk people. But other than that, no, you can't really refuse either.
Right, so what are you currently doing?
So I work between both an accident emergency. Last night I was in the NOVID area. Last week I was in COVID. So it really just depends on what day I go in, where I'm going to be. There's a board, I'm bank, I'm there to fill spaces. So I'll come in and I'll work where I need to work that day.
What are the staffing levels like? Because obviously one of the concerns is that it's the NHS staff themselves who are the people who are going down with the illness, because obviously you've bombarded by the virus.
I know so many of my colleagues that have been off with it, and I'm lucky I haven't been off with it at all. So what's happened though is there's many areas of the NHS which aren't in use right now. So you've got your clinics, you've got your elective areas, where the staff from there have then been redeployed to places like A&E, ITU, and the COVID areas. So that's kind of covering for the people that are off sick. So it is good in that way that we've got those extra staff. However, there are some areas that I know are still struggling. A&E at the moment, where I am, does seem to be fine, but I know that there's other A&Es that there are lots of shifts out for that are still needing covered as well. So I think it really just depends on what hospital you're in and what day it is, to be honest. But the staffing levels recently have been good from what I've noticed.
Okay, and so then on to the most pressing thing. the PPE, which those of us who know hee-haw about medicine would have had no clue of the terminology of PPE 3-4 weeks ago, suddenly now think we're all experts on it. So
it was so strange for me because I'd never heard anyone else use PPE apart from in my work, and I was sitting in the, I'd just woken up from a night shift, so I was kind of half asleep, and I was listening to the news, and I was like, did they just say PPE? I was like, what is going on? Like, I did not expect this to be on the news, but I mean, I'm glad it is. But yeah, I mean, I've had my opinions on it. At the beginning, I found it really different. It's hard because compared to other countries, what we're using is different. So when you look at countries like China, where they're wearing the full mask, they're wearing double gloves, they're wearing like wrist length gowns, like ankle length, like trouser gowns as well, and then they've got like covers for their shoes, they're completely covered. Whereas where I work, that is not how it is. Unless you're working with a patient who is ventilated, then you will usually be wearing just a surgical mask, a visor, gloves, and a gown. And it's not a full length gown, it's just a gown for over the front of your uniform.
Like the plastic poly bag type gown.
That's exactly what it is. And even in the past 6 weeks, our surgical masks have changed. The ones we had before, I preferred personally. The ones we have now just don't really fit my face right, if I'm honest.
Is your nose too big, or what's the...
Oh, it's just too baggy. And then also it's like one now you've got to just put behind your ears instead of tying, so I'm getting like sore behind the ears from it pulling. These are like little things that are happening with me.
No, but how long's a shift?
12 hours.
Yeah, so if you're working for 12 hours with something that's hurting your ears...
I'm changing it all the time, whereas if you work somewhere like ITU, you are in... For that patient, usually, so you'll be wearing all of the one set of PPE, and you're going to be to change patient, so you would change your PPE, and in ITU, you're usually based within like one or two patients. Whereas where I work, I have to put on fresh PPE for every single patient. Now that can be frustration for the patient as well. For example, if they just want to ask me a question or like ask me for a glass of water or something like that. It's going to take me 5-10 minutes to do it. I'll be in the middle of something usually when they ask me, so they need to finish what I'm doing. Take off that PPE, wash my hands, put on fresh PPE just to go in and do something so basic. So everything is taking a bit longer with that.
So if I find myself in the COVID of A&E, I should take a pen and paper and like...
Pass me notes.
Pass you notes so you don't need to get changed.
That would be easier. But I mean, we're still wearing all of that in the COVID zone as well. And that's just because there were so many patients that come in without... any COVID symptoms, and then it would be something small that would make us realise, oh, they can be COVID. So just to protect everyone, we're wearing PPE in both zones.
Right, so that explains why Matt Hancock, I mean, obviously he's talking about England and Wales, he was talking about billions of items. So you in 12 hours could go through how many face masks and gowns and... when you say change everything, what about the visor?
Yeah. This is a thing. So the visors are getting rewashed and reused, which is never something we would have done before the coronavirus. It used to be to reuse a disposable visor. But, I mean, we are cleaning them properly with the active floor and things like that. So we can reuse them, but it's just so bizarre because it's never something we've been allowed to do before. Goggles and things like that do usually get washed and reused. But because there is a lack of them right now, we are reusing a lot of them. Masks, gowns and gloves, they're never reused, they're binned straight away.
So how many masks, gloves and gowns might you get through in a 12-hour shift, roughly?
Oh, you know, I lose count because I can go through, like, even in a series of 10. If I go to, like, 5 patients in the space of 20 minutes, that's, like, 5 changes of gowns. So if I'm doing that all day, I mean, like, you're talking about 100.
Just for you?
Just for me. It just depends how busy you are that day, to be honest. But yeah, you can go through a lot. The surgical masks we're replacing constantly because the boxes are just going down, so you get 100 in a box. I'm changing that box maybe like 3 times a shift. Not just for me, but for like my colleagues as well.
So if somebody comes into the COVID ward, how many... For someone, obviously, that's needing to be in, not someone that arrives near anything... You shouldn't be here. Someone who's really needing to be here. How many nurses will be involved in dealing with that person?
So we're trying to keep it as in a buddy system. So, and we went back to the old way of calling it a dirty nurse and a clean nurse, which I've not heard since I was at uni. And then when I was in second year, we stopped calling ourselves that. And it became more great. But so unless you're really unwell and you're in recess, then you might have maybe two nurses around you and a doctor. However, how we're trying to do it is one person going in. And that's just to limit the risk of infection for everyone else and probably the use of PPE, because you're having to gown up just to go in and maybe help someone, whereas what we're getting one person to do is go in, do the initial assessment on them, like take their blood pressure, maybe do their bloods and their ECG, and then we're passing that out to the doctor, who is there, or the doctor will go in and do that as well. So we're trying to just keep one person at a time, unless it's a job that needs two people. So there'll be some, we're not like taking any paperwork or anything like that in with us, we're trying to keep that all in the clean area. So there's a red tape around all of the bays. And when you're wearing PPE, you've not to go across that red tape and like vice versa. So that's your like your dirty zone and your clean zone. Usually someone will stand outside and like write down anything that you need them to. So it is working in a buddy system in that way, which is working really well, to be honest.
So obviously all of this has been pulled together in... When did it all start? When did it really kick off of, we've got a problem here?
I'd say definitely before... lockdown, we knew we had a problem and things started to change. I can't remember exactly how long, because I just feel like I've lost complete track of time with all this that's going on, if I'm honest with you, but it was definitely beginning of March anyway, we knew things were going to be completely different, and we started changing the areas. Glasgow Royal was one of the first hospitals to start wearing PPE with all patients, and I think it has done the world of good, and other hospitals have followed that advice as well, but that wasn't set at the time across the NHS in Glasgow. That was just our consultants in that department that wanted to do that. So the thing is, things change every day, and at the beginning I was so frustrated. It was annoying. You go in one day and it would be, this is what you've got to wear for one patient. You go in the next day and it's, oh, you have to wear it for all patients. And then 2 weeks later, oh, you have to wear a visor as well now. So with things changing all the time, it can be so frustrating, because you're sometimes left thinking, well, so for the past 3 weeks, have I just been exposing myself to something, because that's not what we were to do back then, but we have to do it now. So it is frustrating for staff, and I can imagine for management as well, because they're hearing one thing and things can change sometimes two or three times in a shift as to how we do things, new symptoms, new PPE protocols. But I would say that was worse in the first month. Now things have levelled out a bit and we all kind of know what we're doing a lot more. It's a lot more organised than it was before. But at the beginning it was chaotic. And things constantly.
Now, obviously you've already mentioned that England and probably London is different, but at the beginning of this, we were seeing film footage, news footage from Italy and Spain of, you know, people in corridors and hospitals not being able to cope. Are you coping with the level of people?
Yeah, I feel like we are at the moment. I do. We've been waiting. I don't know about other people that were working, but me and my colleagues have kind of been waiting for this great peak that we're seeing in the news in places like Italy and Spain. And I don't know if it's just because we've watched how they've done it and we've learned from what they've been doing, and we are now doing it completely differently. And maybe that's why we've not experienced it in that way. But it's good. I'd say it's completely different from how it is over there, especially in Glasgow. And I think it is the way that we are running it that is making it different. We don't have patients lying around in corridors. It's not. But before COVID, we did. It was probably people were sitting in corridors for hours, and it was just because we didn't have the bed space. So much effort has been put in to make sure that we have beds for people with COVID, that it is so well organised at the moment compared to how it usually is, when we've just got hundreds of patients through the door every day, where patients that we know where they're going to when they've got certain things. We're not waiting on beds for as long. There aren't people waiting about in corridors infecting other people. It is completely different from what it usually is.
So, parking the obvious issue that COVID's a highly contagious disease,
yes.
In some ways, is it actually better at the moment?
In some ways, it is. I mean, people, I think because of the redirection system, I think a lot of the time when people come into A&E, it's not through them being there when they shouldn't be there. I think it's through, like, that is the only place they could go at that time, whereas now we have someone standing at reception telling them where they should be going to get that care. That it is less pressure on the department from people that could be in other places like minor injuries department or going to the pharmacy or going to NHS 24. So it is better than in that respect. wearing, taking on and off the PPE is extremely frustrating. My skin has been terrible. So there's other sides of it as well that are...
Are any of your tattoos wearing off, Hayley?
No, not yet. I'd be very upset about that. And I have to say, though, I haven't been able to get one, obviously, and because I know I can't get one, that's making me want one even more.
Is there any room left in your body for tattoos?
I've got some. I've got arms.
You've got your faces left.
That's it. I just get a mask on.
Yeah, you could tattoo a mask on your face.
Actually, it would be easier than changing it every 5 minutes.
So, have you had many... You said you had a colleague who ended up having to go in. Has there been many people, many colleagues infected? And
yeah, most of them, though, haven't been admitted to hospital. So right. I've worked in quite a lot of areas. So I do know a few different people from different areas of the hospital. So I would hear if someone I know was in the hospital with it. And as I said, it's only really been one of my colleagues that has ended up unwell in a COVID unit. Everyone else I know who's either tested positive or been unwell has been at home self-isolating and then return to work. But I don't know if, I think the girl that was in hospital, it's going to take her a lot longer to return to work, but she is getting better now, but most other people are recovering quickly. In fact, I was working with a girl yesterday who had tested positive, I think it was last week, and she was back at work doing fine.
Wow. So getting back to the busyness of it, they're talking about we've reached the peak. Are you noticing that it's levelled off or levelling off, or is it difficult to judge because they're now more organised?
Yeah, it is. It's really hard to judge, especially what was really horrible is way back at the beginning when everyone was scared to come up to the hospital. So it was quiet, and it was this eerie calm before the storm, and we were seeing what was going on in the news, and it was just so quiet in the department. You were barely getting any patients in. This was way back at the beginning. It was just the waiting that was horrible because you thought you knew it was coming and you thought you were going to get this big rush of people dying in corridors and all this stuff. But I don't know what's happened. We've been able to maybe manage it better. We've not been hit as hard as other people. But it has been completely different from what I expected months ago, like 2 months ago. And it has been a lot more settled than I would have imagined when I first got told about all of this.
So the temporary hospital at the SEC, do you know if that's operating or not?
So yeah, it's open. It's fully functional. I actually don't know if there's patients in there yet because I know it's changed. At the beginning I heard it was for ventilated patients. Now in Peering it's for sick patients that aren't ventilated. So I think maybe because we've not been hit as hard as we thought we were going to be or we've managed it better, I'm not sure. I don't know how that is going to be used at the moment.
But you're not aware of any colleagues who are now working over there? Or
I did get asked to do a 3-month contract there. However, I was happy with working in accident emergency. I didn't want to be going to the SECC. I was going to do a couple of shifts there. I just didn't want to commit to 3 months there.
Would it not be easier travel for you without telling everybody who's listening where you live?
I work all across Glasgow and all the A&Es.
You're super nurse.
No, there's one I don't work in actually, but no, I haven't, it looks great, but I don't know, I just haven't had a desire actually to go and work there. I mean, I think I would do it for a shift if I knew someone else was going to be there and then like kind of see what it would be like, but I enjoy A&E, that's my thing. I don't know if I could go to a new area and maybe not enjoy it as much. I just want to go back to A&E.
So how generally is morale amongst the hospital staff?
I'd say it's better now than it was at the beginning. I think at the beginning everyone was really overwhelmed, we were all anxious and worried. Also we've had so much generosity from the public as well and like actually getting appreciated, which usually I mean, when you're doing your job you do get appreciated by patients a lot of the time, but the way things are at the moment with getting, like, when this first started we were getting...
But there are some pure mad mental people who go into A&E, aren't there?
Don't even start with those. Don't start with the pure mad mental people. they make my job funny. When I get home from work at the time, I don't find them that funny. But there are them too.
But yeah, you're getting appreciation.
Yeah, so much. Even is it one of the Celtic players actually donated, I think it was £2,000 to Accident Emergency across Glasgow, which then went towards a relaxation room, which I use on my break. Absolutely brilliant. There's been loads of things donated to it. So it's one of our seminar rooms that's now got a huge couch in it, bean bags, fairy lights, just somewhere that you can go and chill out for your shift. Because also, even when you do have a break in the staff room, everyone's talking about it, especially at the beginning. And that's what I think people were finding really hard, is there was just no escape from hearing about it. So you'd be going home at night, you'd watch the news, you'd hear about COVID, you'd go into work, you couldn't have a conversation in the staff room without really hearing about it, because it is the main topic of conversation. Whereas we now have this room where it's not allowed to be mentioned. You're only allowed to mention what you're doing after it's all finished. We have a board to write up the first thing we're going to do when this is all over.
Get a tattoo.
Yeah, get a tattoo, go on holiday. That's what I'm going to do. First thing. And go to the pub. I'm missing socialising with people, as I'm sure everyone is. But it's lovely, actually, that we have these sorts of things that we didn't have before. I mean, I don't know how long it will stay. I think I probably need it more on a Friday night than I am at the moment, but on a regular Friday night, really, I'd probably be relaxation or more. But it's lovely. And I think the whole community aspect of that's really nice as well, and people making donations. And not only are they making donations for staff, they're making it for patients as well, because this is one thing that a lot of nurses are really struggling with, is the fact that people are in there by themselves, especially elderly people and things like that, but their family can't see them, and they're used to seeing them every day. They're not able to bring them up basic things. So I know there's one hospital in Glasgow that's done a thing through Amazon. It's like an Amazon wish list where people can go on and donate. And they've had so many things delivered to their hospital that they can now give out to patients as like presents to keep them going, which is absolutely brilliant. And it's lovely that people are doing that as well.
So what type of things, if someone was listening to this and thinking, do you know what, I've only got 50 quid or 100 quid, but do you know what, I'd like to just do something. What's the type of thing?
That particular hospital was, they were just asking you to just donate money or order something off their wish list, and it was like wee things like books and stuff like that. But a lot of hospitals are asking you to bring in things like books, magazines, for me, used to have like portable DVD players back in the day, things like that that people can sit and like entertain themselves with that you might not be using anymore. Things like headphones and stuff like that you maybe not used, obviously not used headphones for hygiene reasons, but things like that. Another thing I've heard that people are doing, which I think is absolutely lovely, is they're writing letters to residents in care homes, because they're not getting family members to come see them, so they're just kind of writing a hi, I hope you're well, maybe telling them a little bit about themselves, just like some elderly people in care homes that are feeling pretty isolated. Stuff like that's been a long way.
That's a great idea, actually. Mm-hmm. That people might know there's a care home, and they might know that there's a care home in their general vicinity and the name of it. You could just write a letter, hi, and just, and you can write, actually, you could then write anything, because you're never going to face to face meet the person that you've written to.
Tell them whatever you want.
So you could use it as much as hi, just to let you know, I hate my job, I never realised how much. Maybe not bring somebody down.
No, I think more wee notes of kindness would be better, but you know, both of it, if that's what you feel like doing. I'm sure there'd be some patients and some residents in those care homes that would totally relate to that.
That's quite, because I saw also there was a player from Leeds, I think it was, who Wishaw Hospital had treated his granddad, and he sent him a voucher for pizza. Send vouchers in for them to go and for the staff to get pizza and coffee and stuff like that.
Things like that are amazing. If you have the money to do that, that is lovely. I mean, I know when we, back at the beginning, places like Domino's and Papa John's were just giving us like free pizza, and say at 11 at night when you're busy and you're tired and you maybe forgot to bring something in for your dinner or your break, which is me most of the time, a delivery of like pizza is amazing. I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't able to have any of this pizza with being vegan, but I mean, it has been like for 2 weeks I've watched my colleagues eat pizza, and I'm not gonna lie, I was a little bit bitter at the end of it. I was like, why did I went vegan to be a good person, but yeah, I'm just sitting watching everyone else eat free pizza while I eat soup.
I saw something today which somebody had stuck something up saying the worst thing about this is vegans haven't been able to tell anyone for weeks that they're vegan.
I saw that and I thought to myself, that's not true, I told someone yesterday.
Okay, so morale's not bad. everybody, you're coping with it. Yeah. The biggest challenge is the PPE.
Yeah. And what's hard about it is you're seeing one country do one thing and we're doing a completely different thing. I mean, we've been reassured so many times that what we're doing is keeping us safe, and we just have to trust that. As much as we might personally feel different, we do need to trust that, or you just don't go to work. They're your only options, really, about it.
And how are you coping, Hayley?
How am I coping? I mean, I've had my down days or my angry days about it, but I think that's normal. I get that anyway. But no, the things I've been doing is I've been using the relaxation in my break. I've also just been going out, sitting outside on my break in like the areas of the hospital where I can do that. I just listen to music and just trying to switch off from everything that's going on. Because one thing that does make it harder is when you're hearing everyone else's opinion, all these horror stories or that's another nurse died, that's a doctor died with it, which can really bring you down when you're working in that area. So I try and not concentrate on that and try and concentrate on the fact that my friend was unwell and she got better, trying to listen to music. But I'm also, if I'm feeling anxious and I'm feeling upset about it, I'm letting myself feel like that for the moment that I'm feeling like that, and then I'm trying to move on. Because you're allowed to feel like that at this time. Everyone, no one knows what's going on. We're all unsure. No one's been through this before. And we're all bound to feel anxious, but you need to find that one little thing that helps you get through it. And mine is listening to music. That's what I do. I go off, listen to music by myself.
And it's a Thursday today. So, yes. And as I'm recording this, in 2 hours' time, everybody will be out on their doorsteps clapping and stuff like that. How's that?
So the first week, I actually hadn't heard anything about it. And then it wasn't until maybe like an hour before we heard about it, and I finished like at 10 past 8. I finished at 8 that night, but I got out to 10 past 8. So me and my colleague were laughing because we walked out to absolute silence. Maybe they don't want to clap for us.
They knew what you were like, Hayley.
But then I looked at my phone, and people like you and like my other aunts and uncles all text me like clapping and things like that. So that felt really nice, and I have felt like I have been talking to my family more during this than I usually would. Like we have, I feel like everyone's connecting more with the people around them than they usually would. The clapping thing's lovely. I think it's really nice. Last week I was on shift for night shift, so I was there for the clapping thing, and a few of us went outside with ambulance crew and police and clapped for everyone in the hospital that was working, which was nice.
Good. So you're going to get through this?
Yeah, definitely. I need to go on holiday. That's all that's going on in my head. I want to go on holiday, see the sun.
Where are you going to go?
I'll probably go see Ali and Italy, see my sister, or I'm actually thinking my best friend's get Bill. My best friend was supposed to be getting married in August in America. That was my plan, to go over there, maybe travel around America afterwards, but we'll see if that's a thing. Might need to wait till next year for that, so my plans are open. As long as it's somewhere with sunshine, I don't mind.
All right, okay. Well, with that, Hayley, thanks very much.
Thank you, it was lovely speaking to you.
I love you, Hayley.
Love you too.
Mama, we all go to hell. Mama, we all go to hell.
I hope you enjoyed that. We're all very proud of Hayley and our colleagues and the hard work that we are doing, as I'm sure you are. The Celtic FC Foundation Football for Good Fund is channelling money towards the NHS nurses, and you heard some of the things that can make, how a very little amount can make a huge difference to all the people who are working hard. And if you can't afford anything, great idea from Hayley just to pen a letter to the local nursing home to cheer somebody who's on their own up. So if you go on the Celtic FC Foundation website, you'll find out more about the Football for Good campaign. Don't forget, if you go on our website, CelticUnderground.net, before Monday, the whatever date this last Monday in April is, and click on the link, see the article for the signed 2003-04 jersey signed by Henrik Larsson. Go on there and you can make a bid for that, and every single penny of that is going to the Celtic FC Foundation Football for Good Fund too. This is Mama by My Chemical Romance. It's Hayley's choice, that's for her. So to everybody working in the essential workers, thanks very much for everything you're doing. This is me, Harry Beattie, saying thanks for listening and downloading. Good night and God bless. Good night. Should have been a better son if you could count on the infection, naked, amputated ones. You should have been, I could have been a better